You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, gear up for the 2016 Cleveland Browns season with new apparel from the Pro Shop at First Energy Stadium. Shop a wide variety of all-new gear, including hats, T-shirts, jackets, custom jerseys, and more. Plus, you can get those Color Rush jerseys that, unfortunately, the Browns won't be able to wear this year.
I saw those Color Rush jerseys
are nice. Are sick. I saw them at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Nice.
Also in the Pro Shop. They are sick.
Let's make those, like, the real deal. Season ticket members, remember to swipe your membership card to receive your exclusive discount and a chance to win great prizes. The Pro Shop's open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, or call 440-824-3427 for more information. Joe Haden, unable to play last week with a groin injury suffered in practice. He provided the latest on that, and Exet talked about his desire to be on the field with his teammates.
You good to go, Joe? How you feeling?
Feeling better. Coming along, yeah.
What are your chances are for Sunday?
No timetable. I'm just trying to, just working with the training staff, just trying to get back.
Will you practice today?
I'm going to be out there. I don't think I'm practicing today, though.
What happened, Joe?
Messed it up during Thursday's practice, strained it, just covering Jennings, running a little simple curl route, opened up, you know what I'm saying, felt it pull.
I saw you out there Sunday before the game trying to work on it. What was that process like, and was it just a true game time thing?
It was a true game time decision, and Coach Hugh actually, he said that I'm down. He saw me working out, and he just was like, you're down this week, so he made the decision.
We've asked you the last couple of years, just how frustrating is it, especially coming off such a great game against Baltimore, that you couldn't back it up right away?
Super frustrating. Hoping to play every game this season, I was working my butt off, to be out there with my guys. It's just super, it's disappointing, it's upsetting, that you want to be out there, but you physically can't, it's really tough for me to not be out there with my guys, and especially, trying to really be a leader for this team and knowing I got to make certain plays, and it just sucks not being able to be out there.
Are you thinking, it's such a close game, and Landry had a big day.
Just seeing it, I feel like I just always wanted to be a part. I feel like I can make a difference in the games, and not being able to be out there, it sucks. It's tough. I know the fans and the team and everybody wants me to be out there, and I want to be out there more than anybody. So, just not being able to be out there sucks. But it's, if you physically can't be out there, you just nothing I can do about it.
We know you played really well, but we're so committed to trying to come back from last year and have a really strong season. Did you prove anything to yourself against Baltimore by the way you were able to play coming off last year?
It was exciting. I was happy to be able to go out there and just make plays. That's what I love to do. That's when I'm in my comfort zone, when I'm out there on the field. So being able to just all the rehab, all the treatment, all the extra hours that I put in, going through the surgery, and being able to go out there and play. It's reassuring. I felt like I still had it, I didn't feel like I lost a step, none of that. So going out there and being able to perform and play, it was definitely, it made me feel good, but I'm just ready to get back out there and keep it going.
Joe, it took you so long to get the first pick six of your life. What'd you think of it? Drafted kid getting one of his first.
Oh my God, he took my spot, bro. I'm just super happy for him, though. He came in, he was super just ready. He's been studying tape, and he's just a really, I could tell just by him doing drills, he's a very, very, he's a good player.
How tough is after giving up he gives up the touchdown, but then comes right back from the pick six. How impressive is that to see that from a young kid like that be able to bounce back?
Oh, it's really impressive. It's a corner. You have to have short-term memory because they're going to get you. It's not if but when. You're going to get got. So as long as you just had that short-term memory, you get that out of your head, and you're just trying to, the next play is going to be yours. And I really like that he had that mentality. He came to the sideline. He was on top. He was in good position. He just made a great play. And he didn't hold his head down. He was just ready to go out there and got a pick six. So, he was, just that short-term memory definitely kicked in.
Joe, what was it like being on the sideline watching Terrell do what he did Sunday?
Man, it was super exciting, man. You know, Terrell, he's a great player, and he loves it. He would do whatever he can for the team. And like I said before, last season, I've never seen an improvement from one player like I've seen from him being able to just, like the receiver, he's a really, really good receiver. He can be a number one, you know, so he's our number one right now. So just for him being able to transfer from a quarterback to a receiver and then being able to run the Wildcats, still, he can still throw, he's a professional quarterback, you know what I'm saying? So not taking that from him, you don't find athletes like him often.
Hey Joe, Ray Horton always talks about if you're wearing a helmet, he's going to play and expect you to contribute. Mm-hmm. We saw that with Tyrone and then Body Calhoun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess when you see Ray talk about that, how important is it to keep everybody kind of engaged and then to expect everybody to perform, not just the starting 11?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's something that he pushes it, and that's something that we push on our locker room with myself and Double D. If you're on the team, man, you got to be able to be ready to contribute. People go down all the time, and it's especially here, you know, you never know. You never know, next man up. You got to always be ready. You got to be locked in. So, you know, just we're always really pushing that and making sure that our young guys, even in the walkthroughs, they're paying attention, that they know what's going on. The coaches are always giving us tests to take home on Wednesdays and everything, so everybody's always locked in, and they know the exact same stuff that we know.
What were your takeaways from Kessler's debut?
I was super happy for him, man. You know, he's out there. You know, like I said, you gotta be ready for your opportunity. And I think that he went out there and showed that he's ready and capable to be a professional quarterback. We believed in him, and Joe Thomas said that he studied very well. You know, going through the blitz protection meetings, and he was on top of it, didn't miss any checks. So, you know, just showed that his preparation, and he was ready to go.
Joe, Body Calhoun over there was saying that you kind of coached him up a little bit on the sidelines on Sunday. Mm-hmm. How much coaching were you doing over there?
Man, I was trying to do as much as I possibly could. Anything that I see, I would like to just tell him just what I see and what routes they're running, what combinations. Just anything I could help him with, I was trying to help him.
Hey, Joe, would there be any extra motivation to play kind of on the same field as Josh Norman in the same game?
I mean, he's one of my friends, man. You know, a really good competitor. Love watching great corners play. You know, so I mean, definitely I would want to go out there and you know put my stuff up against what he got going on. So you know, always want to. It's always about competing. It's always about you know just seeing. I love to try to be the best corner on the field whenever I'm playing. So definitely would be a good experience to be out there.
Would him and Terrell be a good matchup if he winds up following Terrell across the field?
Yeah, it would be a good matchup, man. He's a great corner against a great receiver, you know what I'm saying? That's what you look forward to, and I just think that would be a good matchup.
What parts of his game make you say he's great?
His ball skills, very, very physical. He's not afraid to tackle. He's going to throw his nose in there. He's very good at press, and, you know, like the one thing that I really like about his ball skills, he's able to make plays in the ball in the air. I remember when we were playing against the Panthers a couple years ago and out there in Charlotte, he made that interception. I was on the sideline. I had to see it. He's just certain corners, when the ball's in the air, they turn into the receiver.
You know your body. Do you think you will be able to go on Sunday?
I don't know.
Pretty good. Joe, Kirk Cousins, What challenges he present? Obviously, you guys have played him before, and he had a really good game. What sticks out in your mind when you look at him?
He's poised. He's really poised. He can throw the deep ball very well, and you know he has a lot of weapons. There's a whole lot of weapons to get the ball to, so that helps out any quarterback. He's throwing it to D-Jack over the top, you know. So him, Jordan Reed. I just think that he has confidence in those receivers, and he just puts them in positions to make plays.
Is Deshaun still one of the top threats?
Yo, still one of the top threats. When I see him on film, and when he wants to go deep, he's running very, very fast.
That's Joe Hayden, the Browns Pro Bowl corner, and you certainly want to have him on the field when you take on a guy like Deshaun Jackson. They've got Jamison Crowder playing at a high level as well. Hopefully, he will be out there. When we come back on CBD, we will, of course, go to the phones, 216-578-0850. We'll get into the mailbag, and still to come, Brian Body Calhoun, the Browns' young cornerback who's made quite an impression on these coaches and obviously on the fans after his pick six against the Miami Dolphins.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. Don't forget to tune into News Channel 5 every Sunday morning at 11 to get the latest behind-the-scenes news and information about your Browns. Tune in to watch Browns Countdown at 11 o'clock with Matt Wilhelm, Andy Baskin, Hanford Dixon here in Cleveland. I will be live at the stadium in Washington, FedEx Field, with the latest on the game from the field there in Washington. That's every 11 on Sunday morning. It's Browns Countdown. It is your official pregame show of the Cleveland Browns.
Midi week.
I like that. Can I be like an assistant coach for like 2 weeks a year? You tell me the two biggest games, and I'll just come out and after every play in practice, I'll just yell at him.
Midi week.
Yeah, both you guys need to still make a game.
Oh, I'm coming. Don't worry. I'm not holding out just for the playoffs too. Even though I believe you'll get to the playoffs. If you win this game, though, I might wait for the home playoff game to make my debut.
It's good.
According to the computer.
Yes.
The computer.
Is a road game as of now.
The computer.
We can take care of business, make it a home game.
Let's go, computer. Do it. All right, let's bring in our producer, Matt Fontana, and let's get inside the mailbag. But first, Fontana, were you listening to the question I asked Wilhelm in the break?
No, I was cutting some sound.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'd like to play Guess the Stats.
Okay.
That
question. Yes, I did hear the answer.
Oh, you did hear the answer?
Yes,
to that?
I did.
Okay, all right.
Give him another
all
one.
Right.
Yeah, I'm ready for another one.
Without looking.
Yes.
Hold on. Without looking. No, I'm not. I'm going to ask our listeners. Without looking, who leads the Washington Redskins in targets, receptions, and touchdowns receiving in 2016? Without looking, dog pound. This is about honesty. This is like golf. It's a game for gentlemen. What you do, it's a mirror of your character. So let us know who's leading. You can call us up and you can tell us 216-578-0850. All right, well, the Fontana, let's get into the mailbag.
You know somebody's going to Google that.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. So again, on Twitter, you can tweet at Browns_daily and use the hashtag AskCBD. This is from Brian. He wants to know from Matt, a former linebacker, what he thinks of DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey so far.
First of all, that's our boy, the real BV. Let's give
the real BV, yes.
His proper shout-out.
He wants to know about DeMario and Kirksey, and then here's our obligatory Scooby Wright question. He asks if he'll ever get a shot at linebacker.
He will eventually get a shot, but right now there's really no need for him, and Tank Carter is that third linebacker off the sideline in certain packages, as we saw throughout the first 3 weeks. But I've been pleasantly surprised by the stoutness that Christian Kirksey has played with. He's made some flash plays, and I think DeMario Davis has lived up to the bill at this point in making the plays in the run game. I would still like a few of them to make a few more plays in the passing game. They're across the middle to become the intimidators. Too many tight ends catching the football across the middle.
Yep.
Specifically going back to the Baltimore Ravens game. I want those guys to be
pity the fool.
Correct, exactly. Pity those fools who went across the middle. But yeah, all in all, against the run, they have a big hand, as well as Danny Shelton playing three consecutive great football games, in why the Cleveland Browns have done so well stopping the run as opposed to years past.
All right, Fontana. Oh, you're gonna have to give your answer again.
No.
Oh, we're still streaming for those streamers, but we got to do this for all the people who are listening. So if you're streaming,
yes,
bear with us here.
Yes.
Fontana will let us know. Did they miss his entire answer there? Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. It cut him off kind of halfway through. So, yes, for those that are streaming, you're unaffected. If you're over the air, you're not hearing anything right now.
Okay.
All right, we're back. We are back. We are all back live.
All right, we're back here. We had an EAS test there, our emergency broadcasting
there was,
system.
For those asking, EBS. Before we get the tweets, there's nothing we could have done about that. It was required. It's over. We can move on.
All right, we're going to move on. So go back to the linebackers. What do you want to see from your evaluations of Davis and Kirksey?
I've been happy. I think that both of them have made plays in the run game. They've tackled for losses, tackles at and around the line of scrimmage. I don't think either of them are satisfied with just making tackles down the field, which some guys have been in past years. Even going back, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I remember just watching DeQuell Jackson make tackles for 7 yard gains. I think both of these guys are pressing the line of scrimmage. And lastly, I did say that you know, tight ends have worked the middle of our defense fairly well, specifically the Baltimore Ravens with Dennis Pitta, Crockett Gilmore. So just more aggressive and limiting, you know, that no-fly zone, as we sometimes like to call it there in the middle of the football field, about being the intimidators and not letting those guys willingly cross the football field.
And it collision low crossers, that's what they tell you to do. How can you set a guy like Jordan Reed? Because they've got a lot of weapons, and the answer to my question earlier, which some people have gotten, is Jamison Crowder. Jamison Crowder has been the slot receiver for them out of Duke, has been playing very well. They've got Sean Jackson. They've got Pierre Garçon. Jordan Reed, who's tied with him in terms of targets, receptions, actually leads the team in yards but hasn't scored yet. So they've got four guys there, and when you're talking about a slot guy who works a lot of crossers and you're talking Jordan Reed, it's going to be on the nickelback, which is like if Joe Hayden doesn't play, could be Brian Boddy Calhoun, could be Tremont Williams, because they're playing Brian Boddy Calhoun outside more than inside. It could be, if you've got no Joe Hayden, no Tremont, could be Tracy Howard. You've got Kindred, you've got Poyer, and then you've got those two linebackers. That's a tough matchup. That's a pivotal matchup in this game.
It is, and I think, you know, our ability to understand that matchup, and then something that really is, as we dive into the Washington Redskins both today, tomorrow, and Friday, is our ability to pressure and get Kirk Cousins uncomfortable. Because Kirk Cousins can play in streaks like a franchise quarterback when unscathed in the pocket, allowing him the ability to throw the football down the field to his playmakers, Deshaun Jackson, Pierre Garçon, and Crowder as well as Jordan Reed. You allow those guys to get deep down the field, they're good, they're fast, they're playmakers. But when Kirk Cousins has bodies around him and he's getting knocked around, his completion perception significantly drops. And I think that has got to be the focal point of our mindset going into this football game.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's got to be. All right, Fontana, what else you got?
Again, use that hashtag AskCBD on Twitter. This one's from Bob in Millersburg. It's not a list, though. It's just a question. He asked, guys, how much of the reassignment of Greco to play center had some of the struggles of Austin Pastor against Miami?
I think it had a lot more to do with Cameron Wake and the fact that he's a tremendous edge rusher and has been, so he's been to four Pro Bowls. And you've seen Austin Pastor in the past have problems with speed off of the edge. Wake brought that as well as power. I don't think it had anything to do with the switch, what happened next to him. I think it had much more to do with the fact that Cameron Wake is just good, and he was left one-on-one with him for basically the whole game.
I agree. Changing those guys around meant nothing. It's just Cameron Wake was in a sprinter stance in passing situations and just got the best of Austin Pastor's outside shoulder, really, and yep, attacked him and forced him into holdings and also forced him, you know, around the edge to get uncomfortable. And that's what you really want. That's why pass rushers, cornerbacks, and quarterbacks are paid the most in this league.
Yep.
This one's from Tevin, guys. He said, in the preseason, our secondary was a question. Now we have four picks in three games. What do you think changed?
They're making plays, but it's still a question. You can cherry pick that stat, which is good. You've gotten two interceptions in each of the last two games, which is good, but it does not change the fact that you have allowed multiple passing touchdowns now, and I believe it's seven straight games and 11 of the last 12. So they have got to be able to clean that up and stop.
Yeah, and the consistency of having Joe Hayden
points.
And the consistency of having Joe Hayden in the lineup. I think that matters too.
Yes.
You know, how deep in that depth chart do you have to go? And then again, Brian Boddy, you know, Calhoun did a great job coming in and making that play, but also got beat for a touchdown. You know, so you'd prefer not to go that deep on your depth chart and have a guy that, you know, when confident, delivered two interceptions and kept you in a football game against the Baltimore Ravens.
Right, and you need to keep that going. If you're looking at just the raw stats, the Browns have given up the 11th most passing yards this year, 899. They have given up seven passing touchdowns on the season, which is the fourth most. So to say that we are, you know, elite on the back end, I think is a little bit of a stretch thus far. So to me, they've got to still pick it up a lot on the back end of this defense.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's been – what's great is that they're generating those interceptions, and I think that that is important. It is certainly helping things, but at the same time, I think it may be masking some things as well.
Well, sure.
Because that's how teams are affecting the Browns most. That's through the air.
Right.
And you need to clean that
up.
And
we've seen a lot of Kindred rotating in certain spots. Ibrahim Campbell missing the Miami Dolphins game. We haven't really played, had the full deck of cards in any football game, really.
We have not, and we will hope to. We hope to, but I think that is a big, look, when this season started, Okay, Kaywan Williams was supposed to be your nickel. That situation happened. Justin Gilbert was supposed to be a big role player for this team. He's now a Pittsburgh Steeler, not playing much of a role for them other than on special teams. So it is a new group, but you're going to need Brian Boddy Calhoun to be more than what you said, a Band-Aid to a flesh wound. You're going to need him to develop quickly before your eyes. Same with Tracy Howard
to play the way he did early in training camp.
And Tremond to kind of recapture some of, you know, his youthful magic, et cetera, out there. And Joe Haden to be Joe Haden. There are still, when I look at this defense, the biggest area of concern is not the front, nor is it the linebacking room. It is easily the back end of this defense. All right, let's go quickly to Phil in Brecksville while we've got him on the line. Phil.
Hey, guys, Matt and Nathan. You know, as I watch this coaching staff coach to win every game, and I watch the players just ball out and give everything they can, I get madder and madder at Tashi Brown and Paul DePesta. You know,
they could have
rebuilt this team and given the team a chance to win. They could have done both.
So you don't think they've had a chance to win in these last two games?
No, I don't think. You know what, Nathan? I think their arrogance and their stubbornness has cost us games. I mean, what team gets 14 draft choices and every one of those 14 make the team? What that did to our team was put Marlon Moore and Darius Green guys on the special teams out. You know, if Sean Coleman and Spencer Drangle can't beat out Austin Pastore or Houston, we got a problem. You know, they had a right tackle, right tackles don't grow up on trees. We got an owner that would pay anything. We're $1 million under the salary cap. Mitchell Schwartz was under 28 years old and wanted to stay here, and they didn't pay him.
That's actually not true. The Mitchell Schwartz piece of it. They offered him more money than he ended up signing for with Kansas City. He turned that down. Went out to the market, said he could get more money, couldn't, and then tried to come back, and at that point they had moved on. So the factual statement is that they had actually offered him more money than he signed with Kansas City. However, that all being said, Matt and I said of all the free agents they had, the one that you and I both would have kept, especially seeing what he signed for, was, of course, Mitchell Schwartz. And I think you could have seen that yesterday. But you're knocking them for not having a guy like Marlon Moore, and that they're building something for the future, and to say that they are not competitive, they have been very much in the last two games. One with the 3-0 Baltimore
Ravens.
Ricardo
Lewis is Marlon Moore.
And Ricardo Lewis is playing great on special teams.
At 23 years old.
Yes.
And a draft pick by this regime.
You can do. They are the only team in the NFL that has had a rookie nominated for the Pepsi Rookie of the Week all 3 weeks and have it be a different person all 3 weeks, with Coleman winning the award in week number two. I think that the one thing you can get upset with them about, I mean, you're entitled to get upset with them about whatever you want. But the one thing that, you know, is obviously how good Carson Wentz looks now. And Carson Wentz, I've talked to a couple scouts around the league because I like to talk to people about it after the fact. Nobody, and even those that's coming out of the Philadelphia organization, expected what's happened in the first 3 weeks to happen with Carson Wentz. The Carson Wentz you see now is not the Carson Wentz that was on tape at North Dakota State. He has been put in a perfect environment. He is a borderline genius, I'm told, and he is working his butt off, and you do nothing but tip the captain. Did the Browns miss the evaluation there? Time will tell, but early indications are
yes,
they did, and they'll own that. What they were able to get out of that was Corey Coleman, Sean Coleman. They've got, the list of picks and the people that are here from that go on and on, not to mention next year's first, next year's second from the Titans, and 2018 second from the Eagles. So there are so many players to be added to this equation when it's all said and done that Carson Wentz is going to turn into about 8 or 9 guys on your Cleveland Browns team. The key will be the next time they are presented with an opportunity at the quarterback position, they must nail it. They must. This one right here, it appears at least 3 games in the season, they have not nailed it. But they've gotten pieces that they think are going to be productive for their football team. And if you do that and get it next time, you are in good shape. The key is to do it. But to say that they're not competitive, I mean, I don't know how you could say that after watching the last two games. And by the way, if you watched Monday Night Football, you saw some cast-offs from the Browns on the defense of the Saints. That defense did not look so good. Dante Whitner hasn't signed anywhere. Brian Hartline has not signed anywhere in the National Football League. The Jags are 0-3, and they have a safety that was with the Browns that's getting crushed down there. Mitchell Schwartz played well. Again, we said it. So we're on record saying that's the one guy that you and I would have kept. Alex Mack didn't want to be here. No matter how bad you wanted Alex Mack to be here, he didn't want to be here.
Right.
Not here. So they can only control what they can control. But in terms of cleaning out some of the expensive older players on this team to bring in younger guys that they drafted and feel can develop and to get the results that you've been getting the first 2 weeks. And I know you can say, well, results, what results are they getting? They're 0-3. Yes, they are 0-3. But it's funny, history shows now after 3 weeks, they played the Eagles better than anybody, and that includes the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were up 20-0 on the Ravens, and I know they didn't win that game, but certainly they were in it and were competitive with a team that's 3-0.
And even a Ravens team that beat the Buffalo Bills the way they did in week one, and then the Buffalo Bills go and stomp out the Arizona Cardinals, who, as you said, is a lot of people's NFC contender in the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Well, it just goes to show what a crazy, crazy league it is.
Right.
But at the same time, they are competitive. And to say that they're not competitive, I think, is erroneous.
And I think it's absolutely erroneous. And I think, as Herm Edwards said again on Really Big Show, and another quote was, we are hyper-competitive with probably the least talent in all three football games that we've played thus far this season.
Yes, and that speaks to the coaching, and that speaks to also developing. And I think this is a team, again, the whole key was, you know, it's funny. I saw in Good Morning Football, they had, which is a show that I've been on a couple times and I love it, they had each of the four people that are on the show to name their most disappointing team of the season. Two of them said the Browns, which I found absolutely baffling, because what were your expectations for the
right.
Browns? To be disappointing, it means, were they supposed to be
3-0? Who are these people?
Kay Adams, Nate Burleson, Peter Schrager, and Kyle Brandt.
Okay, and who picked the Browns?
I don't remember the two of them, but two of the four did. I think even Nasty Nate may have picked the Browns. But to be disappointing means you had to fail to live up to some sort of expectation. I think for the Browns, I think there were plenty of people, if you asked the Browns, were they going to be 0-3 after three games, that would have said yeah. Now, I think, if anything, they've been more competitive in those games than people probably may have thought. So disappointing to me is the Arizona Cardinals, who are 1-2 and have gotten...
Indianapolis Colts, who are 1-2.
The Colts are 1-2.
The Panthers are 1-2.
Lucky what? New Orleans is 0-3.
Right.
The
Jaguars are 0-3.
Like, how are they not?
That's just people not doing their job and wanting to steamroll on Cleveland.
It just, to me, that was surprising to me, only for to me, to be disappointed means you must be well behind the expectations you have set for yourself. And I don't think, you know, the Browns were, I don't think anybody was talking Super Bowl with the Browns, but people were certainly talking playoffs with the Jags. They're 0-3. So they're, right off the bat, to me, more disappointing than the Browns. And I think the Arizona Cardinals, people are talking Super Bowl championship, and they're 1-2 and have some ugly losses. So just interesting. Going to be very, very interesting to see what happens there. All right, when we come back, Brian Body Calhoun, we'll hear from him. Jesse the Body, right after this on CBD.
Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Let's go to the Browns quarterback, who did something no other Browns player had ever done before, record a pick six in his NFL debut. Brian Body Calhoun in the locker room.
I mean, first game action and then such a huge play. Does that kind of settle you down, give you a bunch of confidence moving forward?
No, for me, it actually does the opposite, you know, because when you make a play like that, I always want to be plus one. I always want to be up one. I don't like to make a play and then someone made a play on me. So for me, it heightens me. It makes me say, okay, listen, we got to stay plus one. We got to keep it going. We got to stay hot and be ready for if a play comes your way.
Can't be all downhill from
No, it's not. It is not get a pick six and relax. No. That is the worst thing you could do, because if you give up two touchdowns, trust me, they'll forget about that pick six.
Was Tyrone with you before you got here?
Yeah, Tyrone Holmes. Yeah.
Did that help having somebody else make the transition with you?
Yeah, you know, because then we could lean on each other. We already knew each other. We've been around each other for about 4 or 5 months now. And it was nice going to the same team. We was on the same flight and everything. We kind of moved at the same pace and just kind of stayed on each other, kind of got in the playbook together a little bit.
So when you came here, you were on the same plane?
Yeah.
He caused the pick six, right?
Yeah.
So he's another guy contributing. Mm-hmm.
So I told him that pick six belongs to me and you. I'm going to start telling him to put Tyrone Holmes in there too.
Could you talk about the mentality you have to have to play that position? A lot of young players, if they give up a touchdown early, that will hurt their confidence, will, and they remember that. Whereas it really seemed with you, it happened, but you it when you watch it on film after that, you couldn't tell. You couldn't see that on the film. Did you just touch on that confidence that you have, that short-term memory to play cornerback?
Yeah, as a corner, you always want to have a short-term memory, not too short to where you're forgetting about everything, but where you can move on to the next play. But I really got to give it to my coaches and my teammates, because when I got to the sideline, I wasn't down per se, but I was just feeling like, you're a rookie. First play, first pass, knowing where you got scored on. And when I got to the sideline, my teammates, Joe, Tremont, Tracy, everybody did a good job of making sure I was still up. I stayed up. And it was like, it was good D. You had good coverage. We just got to make the play. Just be ready to play. Yeah, I mean, you're going to play a lot still, so be ready to play the rest of this game and play good. So I really got to give that to my teammates, to be honest, and my coaches.
Ball was right on his hands, too.
Yeah. It was a good throw. There's some things I could have cleaned up, but... like I said, I got to give that to my coaches and my teammates.
Did you score at Minnesota?
Twice. Yeah.
Interception?
Yeah.
So you've been there before. You acted like you've been there before.
I have been there before, yes.
No celebration? I don't know what you did. Did you hand the ball to the ref?
No, actually, my teammates beat me to it. I did not celebrate, no.
Did they take the ball from you?
Yeah, I got the ball. First pick six, you got to keep the ball. You got it. That's going up in the trophy case.
Very good.
Is there a feeling, though, because of your background, you know, because like you weren't a high pick here, I mean, obviously you weren't even drafted here, is there a feeling that maybe there's less room for error sometimes? Do you have to fight that a little bit?
Always. And that might not be the undrafted stigma that I have, but that's just the standard that I carry myself on. I always feel like I have little room for error, because this is the NFL, and the guy behind you, he's never really that far behind you. You know, so you always got me on your game. You always got to be ready to go, because you never know. You never know when it's going to be your last play. You go down, somebody step in, and you may never see the field again.
Has Joe Hayden had an influence on you in the short time you've been here?
I wouldn't say short time. Joe Hayden's had an influence on my game for a very long time. You know, everyone wants to play to that caliber and contribute to a team the way he's done. So, of course, Joe Hayden has had a huge influence on my game. But not only him, everybody here. I take things from all the DBs, safeties, everything. You know, I try to, like a sponge, you know what I mean, soak up as much as you can.
Coming into the league, though, was there, you know, everyone talks about, you know, whether it's quarterback, running back, wherever, I want to be the next, whatever, that's the guy that I grew up watching, wanting to emulate and be like, who is your guy that coming up through high school and college that you watched, that you said, you know, I want to be him?
Michael Vick. I wanted to be Michael Vick. I played quarterback my whole life. I wanted to be Michael Vick growing up. Sorry to my Minnesota fans, but Ohio State was my favorite school growing up, so I really looked up to Terrell Pryor. He doesn't know that, but I wanted to be like TP and Michael Vick.
What was it like watching? You said you wanted to be like Terrell Pryor. What were you thinking when you were watching what he was able to do Sunday?
He's been doing that for a very long time, you know, so it's not surprising seeing that from him, but it's also gratifying to see it when he's on your team, to see a guy battle like that. My first 2 weeks, I've went against him every day, and we've done nothing but made each other better. So credit to him as well. He's really worked for that.
So there's a little bit of that influence when you got the ball in your hands on Sunday and you're trying to get into the end zone, right?
Yeah, my coach told me, he said, yeah, not a lot of people know about your offensive background. I've scored plenty of times. I was more of an offensive guy in high school. Defense kind of was a good knack for me. But, yeah, I'm used to having the ball in my hands.
Who switched to the defense right when you got to college?
Yeah, when I got to Coffeyville Community College, they said they were going to play me at cornerback.
Mm-hmm. That's Brian Body Calhoun. And, Matt, for a guy that was signed after the 53-man cutdown, how impressive is it that he could be out here? He's inactive the first 2 weeks, and his third week come in and actually play a lot and play well.
It's very impressive, and I think it's just goes to it's a testament to him as a player, and I think the trust that Ray Horton has in him as a player, based on what you saw over the course of maybe the first 2 weeks of practice, to say, hey, our scouting guys were good on him when we've given him more. He's adopted it very quickly into his game, and he's then gone out and reflected, you know, what he's learned in the classroom on the football field, to the point where when, you know, Joe Hayden misses last week's football game, he's the next guy up. And I think it's it is hard. But if there's any position that you could potentially play, I think DB might be one of the, you know, I say D line and defensive back, because linebacker, you're the communicators, and sometimes, you know, do you play right and left? Do you, you know, do you go with a guy or not? Whereas a lot of the only thing you have to learn is the techniques within the defense, because some coverages are coverages. It's now, what do your coaches want you to do within those coverages, especially against the looks of the Miami Dolphins?
So he came from the Jags, and that's a 4-3, Seattle-based 4-3, so probably a lot of cover three down there. That's what, you know, obviously, that there, Gus Bradley is
either like off-man and press bail technique.
How different is that coming? And now we are playing a lot of four-man fronts, but how different is that? Like, does a defensive back, a corner's role change a lot scheme to scheme? I guess I would say, is it more of a man scheme versus a zone scheme? Otherwise, it doesn't. Does it change?
It doesn't.
That much?
It doesn't mean that. It doesn't. It doesn't change that much. And I mean, for him, as I said, in cover three, you're going to show press as if it's going to look like man, and you're going to press and bail to your third per se. Or in some cases, you can play off in cover three, or you can play off in man if you can again run, you know, with a guy running a slant, as long as you have the proper technique, as I said, within that coverage. And then you come here and we play a plethora of coverages. You know, we play man free. We, you know, we play some six where it's quarters to one side and, you know, and half safety to the backside. We play quarters, especially against a team that like to run the shallow cross, you know, a la the Baltimore Ravens. So it's all it. And here's the thing. Had Brian Boddy Calhoun come in and spent the entire training camp with us, the game may have been too big for him and not made the Cleveland roster. I think for a lot of guys, when they come in and it's only game plan specific and you only carry, you know, 40 to 60% of your playbook into each game and it's unique to that team, because you have to learn and relearn each and every week. And in some cases, you... I like to use a word that I can't technically say on the radio. You customize, you know, everything to that team. And the next week you can run the same defense, but because you're not playing the Dolphins, it's completely different. Right, you call it the same thing. Yeah, you tailor everything to that team. So essentially, Brian Boddy Calhoun learned how to play defense against the Miami Dolphins. Now he's going to unlearn that. And if he happens to go this week, it's how do I learn to play these defenses against the Washington Redskins? Instead of in training camp, it's I have to learn to play the defense against who knows whatever Hugh Jackson's going to give us. And that's why I always loved getting into the regular season, because you taper down what you do defensively and you really hone in on what you do specific to the team that you're playing, as opposed to being ready for anything.
Yeah, and I think they did a heck of a job when you think about to have three guys make an impact that were brought in at the 53-man cutdown in 3 weeks, get them up to speed on this defense. Speaks a lot not only to the coach in the area, but to the guys themselves and their dedication to getting their playbooks and their preparation.
And I think even going back to the Cleveland Browns Radiothon, when we had Paul DePodesta on the show, he talked about this year drafting 14 guys and 14 guys making the team. This is an easy team to make. So this is an opportunity for Lemonnier and Holmes and Brian Boddy Calhoun to come in and make an impact next year at this time. Going to be a much tougher team to make. And all that does is continue. It's the iron sharpens iron, you know, analogy that people kind of talk about. It's you keep raising the stakes and raising the competition and raising the level of play to the point where you've added so much talent via the draft and judicious via free agency that, you know, the iron truly does sharpen the iron, and then you have the sharpest iron out there, and you become competitive in the AFC North.
Certainly hope to do that, and hope to do that quickly. Let's go. Iron sharpens iron. Talking like a Game of Thrones veteran over there.
Game of Thrones stole that from someone else.
I think that started in medieval times, iron sharpens irons.
I'm sure.
And, you know.
Braveheart. Need a break.
Braveheart. We're going to get a break when we come back. Final thoughts here on this hump day edition of CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Matt Wilhelm. I was told by Adrian Seghetti. Sorry if I mispronounced your last name. Iron sharpens iron. It's actually from the Bible, Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. So yes. That's old school, bro.
It is old school.
That's old school.
It goes way back.
Indeed, it does. We've been watching some fun videos.
Some fantastic, passionate.
Some passionate videos.
Members of the Dog Pound.
Yes. Probably the most passionate member, El Presador, just bringing knowledge about this team, which I like it. And I like his passion. It's good. I wish
we're
could air it.
We're a powerhouse, baby.
If we could air it on the air, we would.
Fontana's fingers might start to bleed with all the beeps.
On the dump button. But
I'm up for a challenge.
It's awesome stuff. It really is awesome stuff. Yes.
And it's actually legit, too.
Yeah. It is. It's good. It's good stuff. All right, so we've got the Redskins. Tomorrow we'll have Hugh Jackson live on the show. We'll have John Kine also, who covers the Redskins for ESPN. He'll be on the show to give the perspective of this Redskins team. But one thing I talked about, I kind of hinted at earlier, when, you know, the media always talks, oh, this is a must-win game. You know, Miami's 0-2 at home. It's a must-win game. They didn't come out and play a great game, by the way. This one for the Redskins, 1-2 at home. The Browns are coming to town 0-3. This is a must-win game for them. Do players in the locker room get a sense of this is a must-win game? They're going to play harder because it's a must-win game. Does that happen?
It doesn't necessarily happen. You don't necessarily want to go out and play harder because that means you're obviously not playing hard or hard enough. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, and I think at FedEx Field, 90,000 people expect you to come out and play hard each and every week. But I think in some cases what that means is there's less margin for error. And you can't let that one slip through your cracks. And I think that every team in some cases believes that if we do, you know, these 3 to 5 things in the football game, and, you know, last week your list was very long of the things the Cleveland Browns needed
they
to do.
They pretty much got them all.
That's what I mean. I'm just saying they needed to do those things to put themselves in a situation to win a football game. Washington probably has 3 things they need to do, and if they do them, they'll win the football game. And for them, it's the margin for error. And also, they start becoming the football team they believe they can be, and you get rolling with 2 in a row. 2 becomes 3, becomes 4, and so on.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Some good stuff from Cody Kessler, Joe Hayden, Brian Boddy, Calhoun. Tomorrow, as I said, Hugh Jackson, John Kime. Also, I'm told we will have Corey Lemieux or Tyrone Holmes in studio, actually both of them, one in each of the next 2 days. So getting to know these young Browns, making an impact on Ray Horton's defense. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys for my Mopedman, Matt Fontana, Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of CBD.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.